What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, every day, from before sunrise until late into the night, undocumented immigrants across the U.S. are being picked up by ICE officers, the frontline soldiers in President Trump's crackdown on illegal immigration. And increasingly, the arrests are collateral. People officers come across while looking for somebody else. It's Monday, July 31st.
I'm so sorry. What is your name?
A-N-N-A?
A-N-A. It's Ana Delgado? So what happened today?
They came looking for my brother, and they, instead of taking him, they took my dad, because they didn't find my brother.
How does this situation, if your father is deported, how does that leave you guys?
He's the one that held up the household. There's really nothing here for us.
So since he took office, about 65,000 undocumented immigrants have been arrested, which is about a 40% increase over the same time period last year.
That's a very meaningful increase.
Huge.
My colleague Jennifer Medina recently spent a day in the field with immigration officers enforcing the president's new policies and documented their encounter with the Delgado family.
So we went to Riverside, California, which is about 50 miles east of Los Angeles, and we were in a part of Riverside that is quite rural. This is not the sort of urban area people think of when they think of Los Angeles. It's a lot of farms, a lot of small ranches. People tend to have chickens and horses in their backyard. And it has become a pretty heavily Mexican immigrant community, mostly because real estate there is much cheaper than it is in Los Angeles.
Are we all ready? Is everybody ready? We'll go ahead and brief.
So we met immigration officers at 4:30 in the morning in the parking lot of a hardware store, which is where they started their operation. Putting on their bulletproof vest, drinking their coffee.
All right, go ahead. Then if everybody's ready, get started.
And then they just sort of gather in a circle and go over who they're targeting for the day. They had six targets for that day.
How far is the first target from here? Not that far.
And the head of the operation went over the details of everybody they were looking for. So who they were, where they lived, what time they were going to leave their house.
The surveillance yesterday suggested that he returns from a late shift. He arrives home at 8:40 in the morning.
What crime they had committed, all those sorts of things in sort of a briefing before taking off to go throughout the city to do these arrests.
Darren, what time did you say he comes back?
0840. And how do these officers find their targets?
It's a little bit of a mystery. They were pretty hesitant to give us really real details on that. It used to be that many jails would hold undocumented immigrants longer than their sentence so that immigration officers could come pick them up. That's now outlawed in California for the most part. And so they say, you know, they rely on jail records, they rely on tips to find anybody who has committed a crime and is here illegally.
And when he arrives home from work, as soon as he parks, we're going to come up and effect the arrest right there, be it either on the street.
And why do they start in the morning, and in this case, so early in the morning?
The reason they do it in the morning is because they say it's safer to do it in daylight hours. People tend to be calm. There tends to be less crowd. So one of the things that has happened in California and elsewhere is that when there have been deportation arrest in the middle of the day. Many crowds are around and people are filming it on their cell phone. And they're trying to avoid that. So they're trying to look for the most low-key way of doing these arrests.
Remember, officer safety, you know. Hey, you know what? We're all going to go home today. If that guy gets away, you guys will get him some other time. All right, so just remember that. Good to go. We're gonna load up.
No, you're fine.
So my name is David Marin. I am the field office director here in Los Angeles for enforcement and removal operations. What we prioritize is to go after the worst of the worst. So there's estimated about 2 million illegal aliens in these seven counties alone. We can't arrest everybody. So the greatest impact that we're going to be able to make on public safety is by going after the most serious criminals first, right?
We're going to go back to the location. Target.
Guerrero copy. You're going 91 west. Do you got, okay, I just copied that we're moving. Are we going to hit it?
The first person they went after wasn't home when they got there, and they expected him to be home. So most of the officers left that home and went to the second target,
which was, look at my list here, Delgado Rocha, Mariano Delgado Rocha,
who is a 24-year-old Mexican national who was convicted of drunk driving in 2011 and then returned to Mexico and came back to the United States illegally.
Wow.
Since then, he'd been arrested about four times for assault with a deadly weapon.
I copy this. I'm pulling around front.
So a clear figure to be arrested and presumably deported by ICE agents.
That's right. Somebody they would consider a priority.
Okay, so we're gonna move forward. We're gonna hit the house.
There's a chain link fence all around this home. So the officer first just needs to shout to try to get somebody to come out of the house. And a woman, which ended up being Mariana's mother, came out pretty quickly and asked first if the officer spoke Spanish. He answered that he did and told her to come out and bring her ID. And she did that instantly. Remember, it's 6 in the morning. She's in her pajamas. And she's just confused. Like, who are these people showing up with guns at my house?
Are guns drawn or just holstered?
Most of them are holstered, but one of the officers has a rifle slung across his chest, so it's hard to miss that. So after the woman gives them permission to come through the gate and enter the house, the officer with the rifle sort of stands to the side, basically watching guard, and about four officers enter the home. And they're looking for Mariano, and they're asking where he is. Del Delgado is the father. At this point, the father has come out, and he's shirtless. And again, sort of very obvious that he has just woken up and is quite confused about what's going on. And he tells the officers, look, Mariano doesn't live here. He moved to Texas a while ago. We haven't heard from him in a while. We don't know anything about him. The officers asked if they were in the country illegally, and they immediately answered yes.
Are they both prior defaults?
Yeah. But they sort of pleaded, like, without being asked any other questions, with the officers, sort of saying that they were good people who work good jobs. They hadn't done anything wrong. They hadn't committed any crimes, is how they would put it. The officers mostly don't discuss anything in front of the family. It's not until they walk outside, a group of about four of them, where they try to figure out, okay, what are we going to do now?
And why are they having what seems like a bit of a dilemma about what to do? Because the son is not there?
Right. The person who they're looking for isn't there, but they've found two illegal immigrants. Both this wife and her husband had crossed the border and been caught twice. They were in the system already as having tried to enter illegally.
Got it. And does that make both of them criminals?
In the eyes of the Trump administration, absolutely.
And there's one minor here?
Yes.
Do you know how old?
No, I don't. It appears to be maybe 15.
What are they going to do about this husband and wife, Mariano's parents?
So that's what they kind of come out of the house to discuss. Interestingly, only one of the officers of about the dozen or so who we were with was a woman. And the woman was really the one in charge right at this point of deciding what to do. And she sort of talks it over with her supervisor and says, look, you know, we could take them both. And another one of the officers chimed in, if the father doesn't give up the son, we're going to take him. And they ultimately decide that if they take both, that means they need to call Child Protective Services for the teenage son, which they don't want to do.
Oh, because they will have literally taken two parents away from their underage son.
From their underage U.S.-born citizen son, right, wow. Which they don't seem willing to do.
You know, we could make the decision, right, to arrest one person, leave one here to watch a child, but then serve that individual with a letter to have them report into our office them, so they can take their child with them. Because, I mean, so that's something that our officers wrestle with every day also. So do we arrest both the family members and then call Child Protective Services?
So they decide, okay, we're going to take the father and leave the mother. She's not a threat to society. We'll take in her husband, leave her to take her son, and we'll figure out what to do with her later.
And did they explain why they chose the father over the mother? It just seems like an extraordinary kind of roll of the dice of who got chosen that day.
I think it is, and I think it's a little bit the sort of general sense that mothers tend to be the caregivers, whether that's outdated or not. It probably is true in this family. Fidel, the father, was the one who brought home a bigger paycheck, and that was something the family ended up being very worried about. But it is absolutely sort of a roll of the dice and a very subjective decision over who to take in.
Let's roll then.
So the father is arrested, and it's actually very quiet, the whole process. I mean, he came out, there was no resistance, no shouting or anything. He just sort of looks down and walks to this unmarked van.
Great work, guys. Great job, thanks.
And about a mile away, they take him out of the van, have him put all of his belongings in a plain brown paper bag, and then chain him with a belly chain, chain his handcuffs to his waist.
So where is he headed to? What's his fate for the day?
So he'll go back to the San Bernardino office, and he'll be processed for removal. If he doesn't claim credible fear, if he doesn't contest anything, he'll be removed back to Mexico today.
So when they get to the process center, the van pulls in, and Fidel is there with four other immigrants. And then they're given a brown bag lunch of a turkey sandwich and an apple and some apple juice. And they sit in sort of a holding pen.
And what did he look like to you sitting there?
He looked sort of forlorn and confused and exhausted. And he talked about how he had not felt danger up until this point.
So it sounds like before this happened, which I guess means before President Trump was elected, he felt that his security as someone living in the United States was not.
That's right. And he, even since the Trump administration, he did not know anybody who had been arrested. He said, of course, he'd seen things on the news, but it hadn't happened to anybody he knew. So it wasn't something he was sort of living in fear about.
So, Jenny, is what the ICE officers did here legal, as best you can tell? I mean, they went into the house looking for this one target, the son, Mariano, who had a long criminal record. And they found someone completely different who doesn't have what we would probably regard as a traditional criminal past other than crossing the border. Is that all proper and by the books?
It's certainly proper and by the books under the Trump administration. What President Trump did is really expand the term criminal, and anybody who has crossed the border illegally is considered a criminal. And that's enabled officers to arrest many, many more people. Under the last couple of years of President Obama, anybody who had not committed a serious crime, so something like a murder, a rape, armed robbery, was not considered a priority for deportation. And if an immigration officer came across that kind of undocumented immigrant, they would leave them alone, essentially. Now that's not the case. If an immigration officer comes across anybody who's here illegally, they're almost always arrested at this point.
So you're saying because the idea of what is criminal has been expanded, that anybody who is here illegally has committed a crime, and if immigration officers find them, that crime is enough to be arrested?
That's right.
So how often do they end up arresting and even deporting these kind of incidental collateral figures like Fidel.
It's hard to know right now how much that has gone up in the Trump administration. They haven't yet really released the distinguishing the number of people with criminal records versus people without. But it's safe to assume that across the country, it's happening daily.
My what? I bursted in tears. My dad means a lot to me. He's my world. He's everything to me. And yeah, it hurt. It hurt because he's an innocent man. He's a hardworking guy. He never stops working, no matter what. No matter what, he gets up every day, every day. And for an innocent person, like, to just get taken like that, no. He didn't deserve that. He didn't, you know?
We're officers, we have children too, and we're human beings. And we know the impact that that has on a child when uniformed officers come in and take a parent away. We know that that's gonna impact that child for the rest of their life, you know, but that's not our fault. That individual that committed that crime that's here illegally, that's the person that broke up the family. That's not our fault, you know. So this is somebody that was previously deported, you know. It's so someone that has had an op, you know, that was here and, well, attempted to enter and was caught and deported, and they're back in the country illegally. So absolutely somebody that shouldn't be here, right? And there's consequences to that.
So is Fidel Delgado deported and back in Mexico now?
He is not. We went to the home to talk with the family one more time the next day and learned that he had returned that the very afternoon that he had been arrested and was back at work milking cows Friday morning.
Why did that happen? Why was he let go?
So immigration officers say that he was let go because he's not a threat. He's not deemed a flight risk, and he's not deemed a public threat. It's hard to know if that's exactly the reason. It's also possible that they're sort of using him as a bargaining chip to get to the son.
What do you mean?
Well, the person that they're really after is this guy, a 24-year-old guy with a criminal record. If they, perhaps they're thinking, if we let the father go, the father will help us find his son.
I'm struck by a couple of things about the scene you've been describing. Officer Marin really seemed to see these deportations and arrests as a pretty black and white issue of the law and right and wrong. But in the implementation of this policy, there seems to be a ton of discretion. So how do you square that, especially knowing that Fidel Delgado was in the end released?
There is a ton of discretion for individual officers in a way there really hasn't been in years. Under the Obama administration, there really was quite a lot of regulations that officers routinely complained about. And Officer Marin complained about that very day. Now officers have a lot more discretion over who they pick up and what they do with them. And I think for most of these officers, they see it as a chance of finally being able to do their job. They feel like they signed up to arrest people who were here illegally, and now that's what they're doing.
So they feel unshackled.
They feel unshackled. And it's also possible that these officers are perhaps softer than officers in other parts of the country where the political attitudes are quite different and much more hostile to immigrants. Probably none of them would call it capricious, but it's certainly in the eyes of the beholder if what they're doing is effective or the right thing to do.
And I guess with a whole lot of luck, or in some cases, bad luck involved.
Absolutely. A lot of this has to do with luck from an immigrant's perspective.
I prayed a lot to God. So, I told him, God, you know you can't allow this. And I was happy. I heard the gate, I ran, and I hugged them. I hugged them and I'm like, Daddy, you're out. I was happy. And it was God, honestly. It was all God.
We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the United States must cut 755 members of its diplomatic staff in Russia by September 1st. The announcement is a response to new sanctions passed by Congress last week and reluctantly signed onto by the White House on Friday, under mounting pressure to toughen policies towards Russia after their meddling in the 2016 election. And President Trump is threatening to cancel health benefits for members of Congress if they don't revive a plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act. In a series of tweets over the weekend, President Trump said he would cut off a federal subsidy that funds the health insurance plans of congressmen and senators unless they pass the kind of health care bill that was voted down three times last week. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.